You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. The leader in Australian broadcast content delivery has reached yet another milestone. I'm talking about the Australian Broadcasting Commission's iView service, which was open to public access last week. It's not that it's all that revolutionary to the rest of the world, but in a bandwidth and speed-impaired world of Australian internet, the ABC has now opened up two digital channels, ABC One and ABC Two, to a video-on-demand service. This is a major leap forward for Australian television viewers, as it's the first real video-on-demand service to be offered here with local content. If you're listening to us from outside Australia, this service is not available to you unless you know a few Australian proxy servers. But for the rest of you, an ADSL 2 Plus connection is mandatory. Most programs are available online for a month after it originally airs on ABC 1 or 2, and the quality of the full screen picture is not bad, all things considered. A typical one-hour program is in the order of a couple of hundred megabytes, streamed to your desktop. When you first visit iView, you'll be warned about the cost involved in watching programs online. There's no cost to you from the ABC, they're just concerned about you running up excessive bills from your ISP. If you're on one of those cheap and nasty Telstra 200 megabyte broadband plans, don't go anywhere near the iView site. In fact, the ABC appear to be doing deals with ISPs to provide iView as an unmetered site. So far, iiNet is the only ISP who has come to Auntie's party. The second thing you'll see is a bandwidth testing page, which will give you an indication of how well iView will work on your current connection. Once you pass this, you'll then see six channels on offer. These include ABC Catch-Up, the best weekly shows from ABC 1 and 2, ABC News, Kazam, Kids Action Adventure and Animation, ABC Docs, which is natural history and social documentaries, ABC Arts, and ABC Shop Previews, which are programs from the ABC Shop download service. Jumping into Catch-Up, you'll be served up a parade of popular ABC programs. But if the one you want isn't there, simply browse the complete program list found on the bottom of your screen. Once you've selected the program of your choice, sit back and enjoy very watchable TV served up to the screen of your choice. Well done, Auntie. At last, Australian video-on-demand content and more, delivered free of charge, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If this is how 100% government-owned organisations progress in today's high-tech world, you've got to wonder where we'd be if Telstra were still 100% government-owned.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
we take a look at the ABC's new iView service, British ISPs in a new deal to tackle music piracy, Google in final negotiations to acquire Dig for around 200 mil, exploits emerge for DNS flaws, new setbacks arise this week for the National Broadband Network, and Adam Turner goes head-to-head with Optus and Telstra in a five-hour telephone debate. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Bulma says Windows 7 is on track, Apple's MobileMe is not so mobile, Census lets search engines index Yellow Pages content, and another Mac cloner appears to taunt Apple's legal eagles. This is Tech Talk News. The Federal Broadband Department have one message for Australian telcos. Stop obsessing about who's going to build the planned $4.7 billion national broadband network and start getting ready to deliver services and market to its customers. The Department for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy is currently overseeing a tender process which will see the $4.7 billion in funding handed over to one or more parties to build the network, with contenders including virtually all of Australian telcos in various groupings. But the department's Deputy Secretary, Abel Raziv, told a Sydney conference last week the matter of who would build the network was beside the point. He said, never mind the debates about who will build it or operate it, we'll all be using it. Windows unit head Bill Vecti said that Windows 7 development remained on track. The company had officially said it would ship by January 2010, but top executives have also said from time to time that it would be done by the end of 2009. Vecti said the product is tracking very, very well and that they are committed and looking good to shipping Windows 7 3 years from the general availability of Windows Vista. Microsoft has released few details on the product, largely assuring customers that it would not be making big architectural changes and that it would have a new multi-touch user interface. Apple continued to have problems with its new Mobile Me service over the weekend in the US, with many users unable to access their email. The unofficial Apple weblog has a summary of complaints from its readers up on its site, and problems accessing email accounts that were once known as .Mac now fall under the Mobile Me service. Apple's Mobile Me status page has posted a note saying 1% of the Mobile Me members cannot access Mobile Me mail. It's just the latest in a series of problems that has plagued the launch of Mobile Me, a $99 a year service that lets you access contacts, calendars, and other files from one computer on Macs or PCs as well as your iPhone. Census has finally seen the 21st century light, letting search engines such as Google, Yahoo, Microsoft Live Services and others access the biggest local business database in Australia for the first time. Although Census doesn't call it Yellow Pages anymore, preferring to go by the shortened name of Yellow, its business database was previously only available to searching through the thick yellow printed book or by searching through the Yellow Pages website. Despite spending lots of time and money on improving the directory search capabilities on the Yellow website in recent times, many people have still complained that in essence, it sucked at delivering the results you wanted. Another Mac clone maker, OpenTech, has arrived on the scene to provide Apple's lawyers yet another target. OpenTech may be trying to stay out of trouble by avoiding PiStar's practice of pre-installing Mac OS X, but will that be enough to keep it out of court? Apple's transition from PowerPC to Intel CPUs and an overall hardware architecture that more closely resembles mainstream PCs opened the door to running OS X on generic hardware. At first, it was the province of enthusiasts, but businesses are beginning to look for ways to make a buck from marketing PCs configured to run Apple's operating system with relative ease. OpenTech's web store page lists two PC configurations and a small range of peripherals, including a Mac mini-styled external hard drive and a webcam. All are said to be coming soon. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Firefox. Have you loaded up the new Firefox 3 browser yet?
I'm using Firefox 3 right at the moment.
Oh, good.
The technology that we're talking about here is it's so easy to implement properly, and it makes so much sense to implement properly.
But the catch is, in order to install a third-party app, you have to jailbreak your machine to load it. Yeah, so you have to load special software onto your iPhone.
ACMA, good luck. We wish you the best.
Walking, talking fembots, ready to meet your every need.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my odd spots were bad.
Oh, no. No, absolutely. I just think it's a fairly ordinary state of affairs.
Yeah, we've done projects with organisations in the US where, for technical help, web chat's fantastic.
Yes, well, you won't get an argument out of us on this panel, I don't think, at the moment.
If I press number one and press send, it calls speed dial number one, which is my wife.
Now, that's ambiguous in itself, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Sorry to have missed you, but I'm at the doctor's having my brain and heart removed so I can be promoted to our project management team.
Oh, that's harsh.
Dear. Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Showtime.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, A very good evening, hello, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you're listening to us around the world. I'm Andrew McComb, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Sitting across the panel of one this evening, it's just Graham and I at this stage, is Graham. Hello, Graham, Graham and I.
G'day, Andrew.
Well, there's a vicious rumour that others will be attending very shortly, but obviously they didn't get the memo or something.
Running even later than me tonight.
That's very unusual. Yeah. Absolutely. But nonetheless, lovely to see you again. How's the technological world treating you at this point in your life?
Oh, not too badly, I don't think. Having fun with the fast internet at home. And
oh, yeah, your TPG. Still rocketing along?
Yep, still going nice and fast. Fast enough to view live streaming television from the ABC.
Oh, yeah, we're about to talk about that in a minute. That's just very much the talk of the broadcasting industry at the moment. So,
oh, I bet, yeah.
But yes, we've had some interesting correspondence too this week too. In relation
to what we heard
from? Just heard on the news. This is from Jason and Oakley. Hi, it might be interesting for your Monday night show. Open Tech beats Pi-Star by releasing Apple OS X compatible PCs without the OS installed. I think that's one of the loophole get-around things.
Mm.
Which we were talking about on the news there before. Wonder if Apple will have a go at that. But the reason why I suspect they've left their legal run so late is purely because they want to know the outcome before they start.
Don't yeah. Well, that's usually the case with lawyers, isn't it?
But organisations like that.
Yeah. I've got to wonder though. I'm sure we've discussed this before, but what is the point of a Mac clone? Surely the point of buying a Mac is that the hardware and the software all matches and works beautifully together, and there's no questions about compatibility problems like you get with PCs.
Yeah.
So what's the point of a clone?
It seems to
defeat all the. But you save dollars, and you lose all the advantages of having a Mac in the first place. May as well go
yeah,
and buy.
Yeah. Well,
a,
not everyone's as well to do as you, Graham, and
don't have ready
cash to buy a Mac. Where's JD when he needs to defend himself? So, yes. But look, wait and see. Apple will take everyone they like to the court, and they've got deep pockets, so who knows
yes.
what might happen.
Oh, well, yep, one to watch.
Some other interesting... I got an email from a listener this week, too. How they got their names is a very interesting email that he sent me a link to, where you can find out how Apple, Cisco, Compaq, all those big organisations ended up getting
oh, yeah.
names.
Are these urban mythological ones, or are these
oh,
real?
Look, you never believe everything you read or hear on the internet, do you?
Well, always with a grain of salt,
absolutely.
But yeah, what have we got there?
We'll try this one. Compaq. This name was formed by using com and p for computer, and pack to denote a small integral object. So Compaq. Or Cisco. It's not an acronym for anything. It's just short for San Francisco. Apparently, that's where they started the company. Google?
Fair enough. Yep.
The name started as a joke, boasting about the amount of information the search engine would be able to search. It was only named Google, a word for the number representing one, followed by 100 zeros.
Yep.
After founders Stanford graduated students Sergey and Larry, that's the two guys who founded Google, presented their project to an angel investor, and they received a check made out to Google. Mm. As opposed to Google.
So Google is a spelling error.
Apparently. Bill Hewitt and Dave Packard tossed a coin to decide whether the company they founded would be called Hewitt Packard or Packard Hewitt.
I think that made the right choice.
That's good. Absolutely. Anyway, there's a few more there. I might read a few more out later on in the show. So,
very good.
Yes. All right. Well, the big news this week is would have to be ABC's launch of iView.
Yes.
Which is, for those of you living outside of Australia, you can tune out now for a few moments or skip forward on your on your MP3 player a little bit, because this doesn't apply to you unless you know a good proxy server that lets you appear to be an Australian coming
yeah,
in from overseas.
And have to be pretty fast too.
Yeah, it would have to be fast. It's probably...
Because that's a lot of Australians are going to have trouble getting onto this as well.
Yes. Yeah, ADSL2 is really the sort of point of entry coming
yep.
into this new technology. But in effect, what it is, the ABC have been trialling it for a while. It's a basically online video on demand service where you can go and download, or not really download,
no.
stream is probably more the word, because
yeah.
you can't download it or anything. It streams directly to your PC or a screen of your choice if you want to bump it up onto a big telly or something.
If you've got your PC hooked up to the TV or whatever, yeah, you can stream it to the TV.
So what it allows you to do is go and watch any programs you may or wanted to miss or wanted to see but you missed, or catch up on something. In fact, they've got a channel there called Catch Up and stuff like that. So you rock on into there, into the site, and it'll sort of test you for your bandwidth, see if you've got enough bandwidth.
Yep.
And it also gives you a warning in case you're connected to an ISP, such as one of those dodgy ones that charge you an arm and a leg for 200 meg and says don't come even near here because you're going to blow yourself out of the water and excess costs.
That's right.
Yeah. Straight up. So, we've got that warning. Once you get past that, you get you go into a menu system where you can choose what you want to watch. And once you've chosen what you want to watch, just a few clicks and bang, there it is, a full screen player on your desktop without downloading any browsers, any players, anything. It just works out of the can, out of the box, on the screen in front of you. And it's very fast, very smooth, very impressive, and I've yet to find a fault with it.
I'd agree with that. It works really well. There's every now and then you see a little bit of, you know, blockiness and, you know, a little bit of compression effects, particularly on things like, you know, title slides with text on them, that sort of stuff. But it's, to be perfectly honest, it's not much worse than Foxtel.
So I don't have Foxtel. Others out there do, but yes.
Yeah. So, and you know, once you're into the program and you're concentrating on the content, it's entirely watchable. The sound quality is really good as well.
That's the thing, is stereo. It's good. It doesn't stop and start. Well, not on the connections that I've been seeing. I've actually tried it on a flat-out ADSL 1 connection too, and it's been pretty good on that too.
It should just work on
the
1.5. Oh, okay.
That's the
completely un, yeah.
Yeah. But you've tried on a 1.5.
I haven't tried it on a 1.5, but theoretically it should go close to working. But no, I was trying it on my ADSL 2, and it was working really well on that. Absolutely flawlessly, I should say. Not just really well, without a hint of a hitch.
Yeah.
And I caught up on the Gruen report, or whatever it's called.
The Gruen transfer.
Because that's on when we're on, so I never get
no,
to see it.
No, it's not.
Isn't it?
That's Wednesday night.
Oh, it's Wednesday. Oh, it's on ABC 2.
Well, it depends where you listen to. It's very confusing.
Yeah, oh, well. Yes. It depends. Yeah, I think it might be on ABC 2 when we're on, maybe.
Oh, could well be. Could well be.
Anyway.
Anyway, just a bit more of an intro. This will give you a bit of an idea about iView. Not out to flog it or anything like that, but it is the future of the way I think we're going to be watching television.
Mm.
Subscription services, maybe, but this is definitely a free-to-air type, or free-to-your-computer type download, which is just terrific. This will give you an idea about what it's all about.
In the past, this is how video streaming and video on demand worked. Slow speed meant waiting, waiting, waiting. Forget yesterday, because the future is now.
ABC brings you the next phase of television broadcasting. It's the new way to watch your favourite TV programs. Whenever, wherever. Introducing ABC iView, a free online streaming video service which provides full-screen, high-resolution video at a quality above that found on most international television content sites. And because it's via the internet, it can carry interactive and live content. ABC iView allows you to catch up with a selection of recently aired ABC shows, archived ABC programming, and premiere content not seen on the ABC before. Programs on ABC iView will update regularly, and the amount of content on each channel will continue to grow throughout the year, as will the number of channels. All you need is a fast internet connection, such as ADSL 2, and access to an internet browser with the latest Flash plugin. ABC iView has its own inbuilt video player, which means you don't need to download any additional software to watch.
You can pause, rewind, or send them to a friend. And it's designed so you can watch it on your PC or your TV. It's up to you.
Users can watch the five channels or create their own by selecting individual programs and adding them to a playlist. And all you have to do is go to abc.net.au/iView.
It will revolutionize the way you watch entertainment.
ABC, redefining television.
ABC iView. TV out of the box.
Absolutely. So, this is just to give you an idea about how it's all going to traverse the airwaves. Mm. It's all coming to you on the internet. This is the future. This is where we're going to go with video streaming.
It really is. Yep.
And
the nature of television will change because of it.
Yes. Where are the commercials? What are they doing? Absolutely nothing, aren't they? So, good on you, Auntie. Well done. Absolutely fantastic service. Go and try it out. It's got to be good. Now, speaking of broadcasting and things like that, British ISPs... Excuse me. British ISPs are in a new deal to tackle music piracy. Now, I thought this was all done and dusted. I guess, obviously, people are still, you know, exchanging movie, well, not so much movies, but music files, because they're relatively small. But the music industry and internet service providers in Britain have reached a deal to tackle online privacy, which has caused, apparently over there, massive falls in their CD sales. The UK music industry believes it's time for ISPs to help fight piracy by disconnecting customers who ignore warnings to stop uploading or downloading songs in what's now known as file sharing or peer-to-peer file sharing.
Yeah.
So far, the ISPs have refused to play ball. Well, why would you cut your, you know,
yes.
That's your revenue stream, isn't it, bandwidth? yes, like cutting your nose off just to spite your face, really. Now in a deal negotiated by the British government, hundreds and thousands of letters will be sent to broadband customers identified by the British phonographic industry as illegal file shares. Oh, so you get a little red letter in the mail.
Please stop sharing your music illegally.
Six ISPs have agreed to the voluntary measure in order to avoid statutory regulation.
Oh, a whole six, did you say?
Yeah, six.
Oh, good. Okay.
Or levies, according to the Financial Times. So many British parents are unaware or turn a blind eye to their children's illegal downloading of music or television programs from these file sharing sites. Let me tell you, Britain, don't worry about you guys. We're pretty big on it over here in Australia too.
We are.
Thanks to the television networks, because they like holding things back.
Well, in particular, yes, for television programs, yes.
Yeah, because they hold it back for a long period of time before.
Oh, and they edit things. That drives me absolutely batty. The scene's missing from programs because we've got to have more ads than Americans have. That drives me batty.
There are regulations, you know, about TV ads, but obviously the Americans do a little better. But, hey, if you're watching the ABC, there's no ads. Have you noticed? Yeah.
I have noticed that.
SBS have got plenty of ads on at the moment. That's just strange, but nonetheless, you get used to that as well. I thought they were a government broadcaster, but they're obviously got to get their revenue from everybody else.
Extra,
so they just prostitute themselves.
Revenue is a thing. Yeah, that's the fun. But part of this...
Can you imagine getting a letter from Telstra? Stop sending music via the internet.
Well, I can actually. They'd be just the type to do it. But I think the music industry has been... I'm not saying that sharing copyright anything is fair, but on the other hand, the music industry has been very slow to give us viable, reasonable alternatives. The quality of what I can download, if I get the latest whatever album off BitTorrent, I can get it really good quality, really nicely ripped and encoded. Whereas what I'm likely to buy from iTunes is likely to be 128 bits and sound shocking.
Yeah, so, that's quality for those of you interested.
Quality.
Sounds a bit like a watery sort of, yeah.
Yeah, so...
it's equivalent to visually looking like it's off VHS when it can look like it's off a nice digital format.
Something like that, yeah. So, and I like my music to sound good. I'm one of those people. I have a nice music player. I have nice high quality headphones to listen to.
You still got your hearing, obviously.
I've still got my hearing. Sorry. What? but they're not making it easy for us to do things legitimately. So the path of least resistance is to share illegitimately. But
Letters are going to be sent if you're in this category in the next 3 months, which is apparently the trial period, by ISPs BT, which I assume is British Telecom.
Yep.
Virgin Media, Orange, Tescali, BSkyB, and Carphone Warehouse. They've all signed up to send letters out. Anyone from Crazy John's, really, wouldn't it? Anyway, so there you go. That's what's happening in the UK in relation to piracy and music. I don't know. I think it's the doors, the horse has bolted, hasn't it, in this sort of genre? Anyway.
Well,
Google. They're going to acquire Digg, apparently, or they're in the throes of acquiring Digg. Digg being the bookmarking website where if you like it, you dig it, baby.
Yep.
And social networking.
You get to read what everybody else is reading, which is, it has advantages in it.
So this is from a blog. I think it was Technorati, actually. Google's on and off negotiations with Digg have been back on in a big way for the last 6 weeks. This is according to multiple sources outside of Google. The two companies have been reported to sign off on a letter of intent and are close to a deal that will bring Digg under the Google News property, the acquisition price.
And how much would you expect to pay?
$200 million.
Well, there you go.
It's not bad. Not bad.
Google could find $200 million down the back of the couch.
Absolutely. Well, Microsoft, what do they earn? They earn $5 million, or is it bill a day? I don't know. Mm. It's probably inconsequential, really, isn't it? But... I know, it's just another. We're going to be talking about something else that Google are up to very shortly too. But the Do No Evil Google are certainly out buying companies at the moment. So,
well, that's interesting, isn't it?
So watch your space. Maybe this time next week we'll be talking about the acquisition of Digg by the big
juggernaut. Could well be, yeah.
Yeah, the big Google. So also interesting in news this week, organisations are expanding their use for IP networks, according to some recent surveys.
Okay.
Australian organisations are finding more and more uses for, obviously, the IP network protocol as technologies and business practices change. And this is according to Optus, of all people. The survey polled 229 government and corporate organisations across Australia. Hardly what you call a big sample, but nonetheless, they've made a few calls, obviously. And according to the survey, wireless broadband is becoming increasingly popular. Oh, well, really?
Yep.
The Australian Census told us that not so long ago when that came out, I think a few months back. The growth in wireless broadband has just been, you know, phenomenal compared to anything else. Although only 28% of enterprises currently use wireless, Optus predicts that the figures will grow to 40% in the coming 12 months. Well, yes, pricing needs to be addressed, as we've sort of come to the conclusion with the iPhone of recent times.
Mm.
It's just bandwidth in this country is just unbelievably expensive compared to what you can get for equivalents overseas.
It really is, yeah. And I noticed that there's been a lot said about bandwidth on iPhone plans in particular, with warnings coming out from various parties about when you buy your iPhone, the plans they come with are absolutely shocking.
Absolutely. Just in relation to using IP networks, the biggest growth area is voice over IP.
Well,
which
there you
is go. Basically free, really, for telephone calls, especially if you're running offices around the countryside. You can hook yourself up to the network and it's all just free of charge, as opposed to the old STD calls and stuff like that.
I mean, this doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, if you're a company and you've built a big network that's capable of moving data around your entire organisation with a reasonable amount of reliability and speed, you're going to find more uses for it. You're not going to use it for, you know, looking up, you know, the weather website. You're going to, you know, be able to move a lot more interesting things around the network.
Absolutely.
So it might be voice calls, it might be, you know, data about manufacturing processes or whatever it might happen to be. There's going to be lots and lots of things.
Another thing too that organisations are starting to realise is that backing up things, rather than ensuring content or ensuring their systems for loss of data, people are now doing off-site backups, which happen automatically and in the background overnight and things like that.
Exactly.
So, yeah, the internet or the IP networks are just chattering away, all automated these days. So it's becoming a big thing for business, I think. It
certainly is.
Okay, Yahoo sold to Microsoft. If you believe it, then chances are you've become part of a botnet, because there's been those, you know, nasty emails circulating around again.
This has been a bit of a trend in these spam emails lately, is to make a subject line look like a really big deal news story of some kind.
Oh, they tried the other day with the Iran scenario and said World War III had started and everyone's going to click the link. Oh, don't click those links.
No.
Go to the ABC or go to a news site and have a look. Don't click a link in an email.
No, they're all fake these days.
Have you seen the latest? Sorry, we should talk about this before I get awfully distracted there. A new large-scale botnet has been spotted forwarding what appears to be real news headlines about Microsoft, George Bush and Al-Qaeda in an attempt to infect users. Basically, curiosity, click a link, you're gone, unless you've got a good antivirus protection system. Security vendor Marshall is warning that a growing large-scale botnet called Rustock is forwarding spam containing exploitive headlines in an attempt to infect the users and grow its network. So a botnet is?
It's a network of ordinary people's computers, your computer, my computer, you know, the computer, you know, down the street, that have been taken over by, you know, the bad guys, trademark, who are using it to further their own advantages rather than yours.
Hmm. And it just sits there, lays dormant until such time as someone turns it on and they try and do something.
Bot being short for robot.
Yes.
So it's your computer acting, you know, on its own without a human telling it what to do.
Another exploit which has come out these weeks. So I don't know, too many bad people out there in the world trying to find loopholes and things in software these days. DNS, the domain name system.
Yes.
Is a fairly important and fundamental part of the internet. When you type something in like CommBank into your browser,
it's absolutely vital, yeah.
It takes you to their website. But
people are now
trying to hijack this when you type something in.
What the domain name system does is turn those names like google.com.au or CommBank.com.au or whatever else it might happen to be into the IP address that the actual network uses underneath. So that's what the DNS does. Now, obviously, if someone can find a way
to... It converts English to computer phone numbers.
Yeah, it's a phone book. And obviously, if someone can subvert that in some way, so you type in your bank's domain name and it converts it into the bad guy's IP address instead of the bank's IP address... Then
and it looks exactly like the bank's website when you go there.
Yep, you can easily be tricked into telling the bad guys your bank username and password.
Without thinking.
Yes.
You just go, oh yeah, that's it, type in your da-da-da-da, password, da-da-da, uh-oh, gone.
So this is why this particular flaw is considered a bit serious.
DNS has been pretty safe. There's been very few major things.
DNS is one of the least secure things in the entire
internet. Why don't we hear about it?
Well, because it's old and it's been around for a long time and people don't talk about it. But, yeah, the DNS has always had its security issues. And because it's so old, it dates back to the very beginnings of the internet. And, you know, a lot of the security concerns we have now didn't exist back then. So, the design of it in terms of security is not as good as it perhaps would be if you were designing it from the ground up today in today's environment.
I can give you an example of how DNS can be used for evil as opposed to good. Mm. A friend of Tech Talk Radio, whose name's Jeff, has a son called Glenn. Now, Jeff has been on the show before, and we've spoken about these sort of things. But
I know this story.
A long time ago, when Glenn, young university student, lived at home with Dad Jeff, the father, as you do, you provide internet facilities for your,
of course,
for your son,
yes,
or for your family,
and you try and do so in a responsible manner.
Absolutely, but when you live in a family of engineering type tech heads that know how things work,
yes,
what Glenn actually did one day was he hijacked Big Pond's usage meter at their little local end server. So when you type in how much bandwidth have we used for the month in the computer there, rather than getting the request from the Big Pond account saying, oh, yes, you've used, 500 meg of your 10 gig limit, what would happen is Glenn had rerouted it to a page on his web server.
That looked the same, but
that actually absolutely looked exactly the same. But what it did was it actually pulled the data off the Big Pond site and divided it by two or divided it by four.
So as a result, it kept growing in a believable manner.
That's right. That's right. So it was really because Glenn had this addiction, fetish, whatever, for downloading things like a lot of people do, the big movie files and stuff like that off the internet, racking up a big bandwidth bill for Dad. Anyway, and Telstra finally sent him a letter. What's going on here?
Yes. Dad wouldn't have found out until he got the bill.
So there's a classic example of how DNS can now be used in the local family environment. Now, isn't that great?
That's very clever. In that case, what Glenn did was he compromised the DNS just locally on that network and not on the wire. He didn't compromise Telstra's main DNS entries to everybody else.
No, only the local server.
Only to his own little network.
In the family.
But even so, that was dangerous enough. So, yeah, it's one to watch out for. Now, there were a lot of patches. I mean, the exploit that they're talking about recently for the DNS, it was a design issue of the way the thing works. So every implementation of DNS software, all the various servers that provide DNS services were affected, whether they were Microsoft ones or Linux ones or whatever. There was a whole flurry of updates came out from everybody virtually simultaneously.
So there you go. They're mostly harmless these days.
Yeah. But if you're running a DNS server in your business and you haven't updated it lately, now's the time. Go and get the latest updates.
So there you go.
It's absolutely vital.
Everybody now knows what a DNS server is.
Yes.
It's one of the it's a fundamental thing of the internet, but you need to know.
Yeah.
It's like the telephone exchange. It does the connecting when you dot the numbers in. Before we go to the break, because we're going to start to run over already, and after the break, can I just do a little tease here? Adam Turner has gone 5-hour round with Muhammad Ali, Telstra, and Optus all in the one room.
I heard about some of Adam's troubles.
And then I sent him an email across the course of the weekend at about 1 o'clock in the morning and just hit send and walk out of the, went to bed, as you do. And my Outlook sent the same message to him and several other people around about 30 or 40 times. And I got abused the next morning.
And it wasn't just a message, was it?
No.
What had you done?
You'd done audio attached to it as well. Adam even sent an email to, I think, you and a few others.
Megabytes of, yes. Poor Adam. As if he didn't have enough trouble before you got your...
Well, it can happen. Apparently, there's a utility you've got to run to clean up Outlook. Well, I'll do that very shortly when I get that chance. Hey, before we go to the break, Apple, their Mobile Me system, which,
oh, yes,
for those of you who aren't familiar, it's about a 99...
It doesn't work.
Well, apparently at the moment it's got issues. For your US $99 or whatever you pay for it, where you can upload and share and do all that sort of stuff. It's a cloud thing. We're all, you know, yep, everyone's yep. got their cloud. This is what Mac used to call .Mac, and it's all moved into Mobile Me now. Apparently, over the course of the weekend, there was an email problem. That is, no one could access their emails on Mobile Me. And if you rely on your email, which a lot of people do when they're mobile and in businesses and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
That can be fairly tragic and results in aggression and fist and table slamming and abusive telephone calls to support departments.
Yes.
Saying what's going on. But anyway, Apple says this was a fairly serious outage. And confirmed that it knocked out email for some of its subscribers. I'm not going to say how many, but they said some of them. But judging by the fracas that's out there in the news groups and stuff, it was a lot of them. So just bear in mind, I think, not trying to knock Mac, because it can happen to anyone. It could happen to, you know, the Microsoft one, which is Mesh, which hasn't gone online yet, but apparently that's in the wind. Who else has got them? There's the Google one. Google, where they've got all their office suite and stuff. Zoho and all that.
Zoho and all that, yeah.
You just, once again, like anything, trust no one. Back it up yourself on your local drive and you should be all right. Okay, and one more briefly. Guess how many web addresses we've got these days? Web, like W's, dubs, and all that sort of stuff.
Lots.
You've read the rundown, you can say.
With the rundown in front of me, I would guess around about one trillion. That's
a lot, isn't it? That means there's a goodness gracious me, a lot of web addresses
out
there.
That's a one followed by a lot of zeros.
It is almost nearly a Google or something like that, isn't
quite.
It? Not quite. No, we need a few more zeros. All right, when we come back after the break, we're going to be hearing from Adam and his view from the couch, which is, stick around for that, most entertaining
definitely
you've ever had
to.
Anything to do with a telephone support department, because these guys, they're just so big.
Yep.
No one's accountable, and they all blame each other, especially because, you know, it's tit for tat this. Anyway, I'm not going to steal any thunder. You've got to stick around and have a listen. We'll be back with that after this.
If you listen to Tech Talk Radio live, you've probably wondered why you can't chat with the panelists in real time. Surely such technology exists. Well, now it does. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. By popular demand, you can now chat real time with panelists and other Tech Talk enthusiasts. All you need is a web browser, an internet connection, and a comfy chair. Monday nights at 8 p.m. go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I'm quite looking forward to when Dr. Ron traverses the wild blue yonder. Very shortly, he's going to be reporting in from the UK. If his wife lets him.
Yes.
It'll be very good. We'll take some phone calls from London while he's traversing. Well, he's on holidays over there very shortly.
Yes, that'll be interesting, won't it?
Absolutely. Now, have you ever sort of rung a phone company and sort of, you know, when you pick the phone up, you go, why am I even doing this?
Yeah, I keep a supply of pens beside the phone for throwing.
Do you?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's my stress relief.
Oh, is that what it is? I must admit, I had an issue with Telstra and the ombudsman types of things. It's not unlike what happened here, what you're about to hear with Adam. But there's a thing called the customer service guarantee, which they like keeping in the bottom of a locked filing cabinet. You know, in a disused lavatory with a sign on the door saying, beware of the leopard.
Yeah.
For those of you Douglas Adams fans out there. But anyway, what happens here is you can seek compensation from a telco if they don't live up to certain expectations of installing or repairing your phone system.
That's right.
Now, I had an interesting altercation with a marketing person on the other end of a Telstra line. I said, listen, you had 2 days to get my in-place telephone connected and working. And I said, it took you 7. Ah, yes. I said, well, it didn't actually, because we had to send a liney out there. And I said, we have 5 days lead time for having someone visit your abode. And I've gone, hang on a minute. It doesn't say that anywhere on the you know, security, not security, the service
guarantee. Yeah.
So anyway, I've referred it on. We'll see what happens. I hate it when they do that to you, but but anyway, that's nothing. That just pales into insignificance as to compared to what poor old Adam's been through this week. Let me say, churning, the process of moving from one telco to another, you're quite often,
not always smooth.
You put that phone call in, you go, oh my God, what's going to happen now?
Yes.
And you think it's going to go smoothly. And then all of a sudden, the most bizarre things start happening. So let's hear what Adam's got to say in this week's View from the Couch.
Let me tell you a story of telco incompetence on a mind-numbing scale. I've just spent 4 hours arguing with Optus and Telstra in order to get my home phone switched back on. This is what happened. I'm moving my home phone from the Optus cable to the Telstra copper line in preparation for moving house in a few weeks' time. Now, Telstra are coming out next Tuesday to get it done. Yesterday, my line got cut off for no apparent reason. This was about 5 o'clock. I was actually on the phone with Optus at the time, ironically. So I ring Optus to say, why have you cut off my phone? And they think about it for half an hour and bounce me around from person to person and say, actually, it's not our fault. What's happened is Telstra's taken your number too soon. They've started the porting process when they shouldn't have. There's nothing we can do to fix it because Telstra now has the number. You need to get them to finish the porting process. Okay, so I ring Telstra. Another 30 minutes on hold. No, sorry, nothing to do with us. All Optus's fault. We haven't touched your number. So I ring Optus. Telstra's got the thing. I can see it here in the system. I think I'm speaking to a supervisor at this time. I can see it here in the system. The process is second from last done. They've done this. They haven't done that. They even gave me the technical details. Ring back Telstra again. No, Optus are lying to you. It's not true. There's probably a fault with the line that they can't be bothered fixing because they know you're leaving next week. I swear to God, it's not our fault. And he told me the status of the job in their system as well. So he's saying, look, it's got nothing to do with us. We can't do it. Optus has your number. So I ring back Optus again and say, can you check my line for a fault? And they say, yeah, we've checked it. There is no fault. By the way, it's Telstra's fault because they've taken your number. You need to speak to the porting department. They're not open now. You need to ring back tomorrow. So that was 2 hours on the phone. So then this morning, I ring them back again. No, you can't speak to the porting department. They don't speak to people. And I got cut off once or twice while I'm talking to them. So I ring back again and again. I finally get through to a lady in faults. She sounds like she's from Bangalore. She's a bit difficult to understand, but she's extremely helpful. Within about 5 minutes, she says, yeah, okay, I can see in the system your line has been accidentally disconnected. She doesn't try to blame Telstra. She doesn't try to pass the buck. She does some magic thing that no one else at Optus could figure out how to do and just says, yeah, we've disconnected you at the switch. I'll send an email to someone. We'll get it reconnected again. I'm thinking, great. So I said to her, look, what did you do? Explain it to me so I can complain to Optus and tell them everyone else is freaking useless and you fixed it. So she told me what she did. She told me her name. 15 minutes later, while I'm on the phone to the TIO, because I figured if she can't fix it, that's the only way it's going to get done, she rings me on the home phone and says, yeah, I fixed it. I'm like, you're fantastic. Thank you very much. So I ring Optus back to make the mother of all complaints because I've now wasted, three and a half hours on the phone. I'm just getting close to the end of finishing my complaint call and I get cut off again. And I pick up the phone and it's dead. The morons have cut off my phone again. So I've got to ring them back again from another line and saying, you are completely stupid. What have you done? Don't try and blame Telstra. I know it's your fault. Don't tell me you can't fix it because you fixed it in 10 minutes before. Bloody fix it again. So they say, oh, yeah, sorry, actually, what happened is we reconnected your service, but we didn't change the disconnection date in the system, which was set for yesterday accidentally. So after a few minutes, the system went, your phone's supposed to be disconnected, and cut me off again. So I got them to fix it again, and then I had to ring back the complaints guy again and say, you know that complaint? And he said, yeah, you got cut off. And I know, you wouldn't believe this, you bloody cut my phone off again. He's like, no way. And I'm like, yes way, you cut my phone off twice. So he was very understanding. And so he put another thing on the system. They got rid of the disconnection date for my phone completely and said, look, we'll wait for Telstra. They also kept getting the disconnection date wrong for my Optus cable, and I was worried they were going to cut off my internet access and then I really have to kill someone because that's far more important than my own phone. So it looks like we've finally got it sorted out, and then the guy from Telstra says he will credit me $50 on my final bill for the time wasted. Now, I've wasted 4 or 5 hours. I work for myself. I don't know about you, but my time is worth more than $50 for 4 hours. But finally, it looks like I actually have dial tone on my home phone again, and let's see if Optus can actually resist the urge to cut it off until Telstra takes over as my provider, and then they can have the joy of screwing up my phone service. Isn't it great to live in a country like Australia?
Entertaining.
Wait.
Informative.
Wait. There's more. As I was recording this, I thought that my phone had been fixed because I had dial tone and I could ring out. Then my mobile phone rang from Optus saying they were trying to fix my line. I'm like, what, you just fixed it after you cut it off? She said, yeah, I know we cut off. I said, you cut it off twice. She's like, twice? I'm like, yes, you cut it off twice. And she's like, well, I just tried to ring you and I still can't get through. So I checked and yes, I can make calls out, but I can't receive incoming calls. So it looks like there is actually a vault on the line, as well as general Optus incompetence continually disconnecting the service. So the reason why I couldn't find the fault is because they kept cutting the damn phone off anyway. So I still can't receive home calls. I'm getting a little frustrated here. Okay, it's a few hours later now and I'm a little bit calmer. But Optus's incompetence seems to know no bounds. Optus fixed my phone this morning, then cut it off, then fixed it again, but I could make outgoing calls, but I couldn't receive incoming calls. So I rang them back, and then we started it all again because they kept trying to tell me it was Telstra's fault because Telstra was trying to take the number. I ended up screaming at someone on the phone who refused to concede that it must be Optus's fault because Optus had managed to briefly fix the phone only a few hours earlier. I then spoke to someone else who also still said that Telstra was to blame, but that she'd ring me back by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was now about midday and I hadn't actually done any work, so I thought it might be time to do a few other things. About 2:30, I'd calmed down enough to try again. So I rang back Optus, I asked for faults, and I got through to Yazan, who also sounded like he was from the subcontinent. Now, as with the previous Indian support person, Yazan listened very carefully to my story and immediately conceded that Optus was at fault. He said he'd look into it and call me back. And 5 minutes later, he rang me back on the home phone. Presto, fixed, just like that. He said the problem was in the exchange, but had something to do with my number being in limbo. Regardless, he said that he thought it was fixed for good now. On a hunch, I asked him to check on the cancellation of my internet access, which was supposed to be August 8, but for some reason kept changing the system to August 15. He came back and said it had been changed to August 5. Lucky I checked, or I would have been in for another screaming match with Optus when they cut off my internet too soon. So it looks like after more than 5 hours on the phone, I finally fixed the problem. The most interesting thing is that it was the Indians who were the most helpful. They were the ones who listened, and they were the ones who could instantly fix the problem. Where the Aussies were just more concerned about telling me it was Telstra's fault and there was nothing they could do. Hopefully, this is the end of it. But with telephone companies, you just never know.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And he's moving shortly too, so I think that all happens all over again, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hang on, who was that voice?
What? Who?
It was an unfamiliar voice.
Would that be me?
Oh, yes! There was an where did you sneak in?
I was just under the table.
Were you? Oh, well, we won't go there.
Yes, Justin JD. Dunlop has joined us on the panel.
Yes, Justin is here. Welcome, Justin.
Greetings.
You've just timed it beautifully after Adam's rant there.
The tirade.
Yeah. Absolutely. I can really relate to it because I think a lot of consumers can, because it's this is one of the disadvantages with telcos in this country. It's like, because it's, you know, one points the finger at one, the other points the finger back at the other. What do you do? Yeah. You're stuck in the middle of as a consumer.
I think it.
Adam's
think
now defending
sort of
his churn to Telstra on the chat forum. People saying Telstra, Adam.
He's on the chat, so that means his internet
temporary.
Is still connected. So that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Apparently, his water's looking dodgy now.
Oh no!
Oh dear. I mean, I had an issue with Optus turning my mobile number towards Optus, and they explained over the phone that. I could take my number with me and that I'd get an SMS on my old number immediately before it got moved. And so I'm sitting there waiting for it for 4 days, 5 days, 6 days. It never changed.
Yeah.
So I eventually rang back and they said, oh, no, you've got to activate it for that to happen. Well, they never told me that.
Mm. Yes, it's the need to know, get smart sort of mentality, isn't it? So I'm porting a number as we speak and confidence has just hit rock bottom at the moment. It's a bit like buying ANZ shares as we speak. Yeah. But, yes, it's one of those sort of things where the Telstra rang me during the course of the week and said, this really inspired confidence, says, we can't find your ACN number. And I said, what do you mean you can't find? I've been a customer with you for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all the company stuff there. It's been signed off, mobile stuff and all that. Not that I keep my mobiles with, but I've got some broadband stuff with them. I can't find your ACN number anywhere, sir. Okay, follow me here. Humour me. www.asic.gov.au. I can't see that site from here. I said, what? You're the Telstra people and you can't see asic.gov.au. I said, well, we've got a basic problem here, haven't we? No wonder you can't find my ACN number. So
not exactly hard to find those things.
So now I've got a second line connected just in case there was an intact there. That's what that intact was all about when I was telling it early on in the show, so that it would save my bacon if something didn't quite go wrong, $45 or whatever it is. Anyway, that's it. Keep us up to date, Adam. It will be very interesting to see what happens with your water and your gas and fuel. And
the internet connection.
Yeah, well, no, that's still on at the moment. I did try to knock that out.
Till the 5th of August, anyway.
I blew his mailbox out of the water. Sorry about that. But anyway, that's life. Let's move on,
shall
we?
He wasn't the only one, I might point out.
Sorry. It's very embarrassing when that happens. There's one reason why you should just wait until your mail has been sent before you go to bed at night. So, anyway. The EU and Russia is unveiling a new spacecraft. Now, Graham, I thought you'd be interested in this because I know you have
I usually do take an interest in space science stories.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Spaceflight planners have unveiled a new spaceship designed for a joint EU-Russian trip to the moon. No one's been to the moon for a while. We've invaded Mars.
No one's been on the moon since 1971 or two.
I wonder if it's
something
changed.
Like that. Yeah, probably very, very little.
Yeah, bit of a dusty place apparently. Lots of cheese if you get really close, according to Google. The EU will be building three. No, they won't. The EU will be building the crew capsule using technology developed for the automatic cargo system used to supply the International Space Station. Capsule will use rockets to land and take off from the lunar surface and to touch down back on Earth. So that it can be reused. So maybe this is the start of a new sort of shuttle-y sort of thing, if they're planning on doing this.
That's a very ambitious plan.
Well, they are Russians, they are the EU. They don't have to be Americans to get into space these days.
No, but
Russians
were very competitive
back in the Cold War.
Reusable to do a soft sort of intact landing at both ends. That's quite a thing.
Mm.
So, that's definitely going to be one to watch. It'll be very exciting.
See what happens. But, all right, and now the JD's here, we must talk about the iPhone. They've released a new OS already, Operating System 2.1, released to developers, plus turn-by-turn GPSs.
Well, it's got, the press release that came out said turn-by-turn GPS in the SDK, in the software developers kit, and also copy and paste, finally. For all the iPhone users that have been looking for it for a few years now. Now, it's interesting. I was talking to some people today about this. Apple have really turned around their promotions policies with the iPhone. Because if you remember last year when it first came out, they actually announced it in advance. That's extremely unusual for Apple to announce any product before they're actually about to ship it, let alone several months in advance. And here they're talking about what the new operating system's going to have that they haven't yet launched either. On the same platform. So that's quite unusual for them to do.
Well, it's taking a leaf out of Microsoft's book. They're touting Windows 7 at the moment, and that's still 2.5 years away.
Mm. Now, the interesting thing is some of the comments that have come out with the turn-by-turn GPS and the cut and paste, like, oh, well, yes, it wasn't a high priority on our list, but isn't that fundamental to Apple's OS X? And, in fact, the old Mac operating system was being able to copy and paste text from one application to another.
You'd think it would be fundamental to any system.
You would think so. And if they were intending to put turn-by-turn GPS in 2.1, why is it that they had a strict policy under the SDK for iPhone 2 that you weren't to implement it? Was there a bug there that they knew about and they didn't want anyone to exploit? Or you sort of wonder why they've timed it this way.
You've got your conspiracy theory hat on tonight, JD, haven't you? I can tell.
And that's why I haven't bought an iPhone just yet, and I'm quite happy to sit back and wait on Adam's original advice.
So. Yes, absolutely. It's funny you should mention it, actually. I have a colleague at the office who is Mac through and through. You know, he's a designer. I only design on Macs. Wouldn't even go. He's even actually put Mac stickers on my PC.
Ooh.
He's gone to that level. But, excuse me, he's just sat on the fence when it comes to buying an iPhone. In fact, he's got a new phone now. It's the Nokia N95.
Mm.
So I thought that was, if that's what that's done to pure, dedicated Mac people, there must be a reason.
And last week, you may remember, I was talking about some of the radio issues that the phones were having talking to the actual networks. Now, that's continuing. And it appears from what I've read, I haven't any personal experience yet, one day, is that if you're a city coverage user, you don't notice anything because you've got so much GPS, various bandwidths available to you, you just don't see any degradation of service. But there's two issues that seem to be arising. One is that the indicator, so the bar indicator on the phone telling you how much signal you've got.
The signal strength meter.
Yeah, doesn't really seem to reflect reality. So you can be on zero signal but still get good data, apparently, that's been seen, which is a bit weird.
Hang on.
So you can have
no signal strength but still yet have data coming in. Yeah, isn't it the same thing?
Which is a bit strange. You would have thought so. And the other issue is that people are finding that they're dropping from 3G back to 2G or 2.5G, whichever, fairly regularly when they're in a borderline coverage area, whereas their Nokia phones and other phones don't have the same problem on the same network in the same space, which would seem to suggest there's a couple of issues with the firmware in
Well, Telstra were reluctant. They did tell Apple to stick to their knitting. Maybe this is, they knew something. I don't know. But,
curious.
It's just one of those technological issues that just needs to be overcome, like with all new software, really, isn't it? When they come out, they've got bugs.
So hopefully the hardware itself is okay, and it's just a firmware upgrade that's needed, and iOS 2.1 may can include that with any luck.
To be honest, I think the biggest problem with the iPhone second generation at the moment is not the hardware or the firmware, it's the plans that they're offered on.
Well, that and the users, perhaps.
Yeah.
Well, that's the issue, really, isn't it? The TIO has issued press releases in the last week or so warning users of iPhones, or general broadband plans in particular.
Yeah, but iPhones in particular, because often the iPhone plan that the telcos are offering has a lower data allowance than their general phone plans.
Oh, yeah, that's standard. Mm. You have to buy a data pack. It's all plug-ons and add-ins, because the phone companies in Australia seem to think that we all want to talk voice, but we don't these days. We want to use data. Mm. And funnily enough, the voice is converted to data before it's sent over the network anyway. Go figure.
It's absolutely insane. It really is.
So, yes, I think even Adam alluded to it when he was on the show not so long back that give a month down the track for the iPhone launch, we'll start reading about some fairly sizable bills that have been sent to iPhone
users.
Yeah,
the horror stories will be coming very shortly.
Yeah.
There are already some stories about people getting bills for the phones that they're yet to receive too.
Well, you don't pay those until you receive them, do you? Isn't that the way the consumer law
works?
That's
been the advice back to most of these people. But, the bills still keep coming.
Yeah, but that's a bit tricky, isn't it?
Has there been a drought in iPhones? I don't know. I haven't kept up with the stories and there's plenty supply and demand.
Well, that's another Apple standard practice, isn't it, to keep things in short supply?
Not make many. Oh, there's plenty around, but I personally am looking for a prepaid phone, and they're just not providing those over the counter. You have to register, pay for one, and then wait for it to be delivered. If you want a contracted phone, there's plenty of those around.
Boy, you've got to be dedicated to get one of these things, don't you?
Yeah, I'm not quite that dedicated.
Absolutely. All right, time for a break. Back with more in a moment.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters
has swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service. Just on.
How does it go?
It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Justin Dunlop is here, and Graham Callaghan is here this evening.
Yes,
gentlemen. It's lovely having you in. Dr. Ron is unavailable. He'll be transiting one side of the planet to the other very shortly. But anyway, more about that later. Apple and Google are still the number one threat to Microsoft, according to memos that Mr. Ballmer, who is now the CEO, well, he's always been the CEO, issued to its troops.
Of recent times.
Not so, yes, just the other day. Even though the PC still outsells the Apple 30-1, Microsoft has sort of dropped the ball a little bit when it comes to the internet, and also is finding the heat being turned up by organisations such as Google and Apple. So
how does Mr. Ballmer think that they're going to compete?
Well, that's a very good question. It's one of those issues that if they knew the answer to that, I think they'd be onto it. But like they've been floundering in the internet world for...
So he's out there sort of saying, quick, find something.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, Bill Gates, you've got to remember, he was very much a part of this 10 years ago, saying the internet is now our core focus on business, not software for operating systems. Mm. And unfortunately, they've seemed to have dropped the ball a little bit here. But the pressure is obviously still being well and truly applied by the other juggernauts that are out there in the... personal computing
and no one wants to sell them the product, because that's how Microsoft tended to get their new technologies. Well, they bought it from someone.
And especially because we're tending to go back to dumb client mode now, aren't we? Remember the old server and dumb clients? Well, we're heading back that way, especially with all this cloud technology. Be interesting to see how their mesh goes.
You wouldn't want to try and run anything locally on your PC when you're running Vista,
would you?
No. PC has enough trouble running Vista on its own.
But then again, you look at the software-based stuff like their Office Suite. What's that? I don't know what it's worth to buy these days. About $800 or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Get it free on Zoho.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? Like, and it's collaborative, something you can't do in the back end of an office thing. So anyway, they've got all that sort of fun to look forward to. They've got to rechange their focus, I guess. But down the road a little bit, I think it's about 30K down the road, maybe not even that, down to where the Google office is in Palo Alto, or just Silicon Valley, actually. The Googlepedia goes live. Now, have you girls heard about this? This is Google's answer to Wikipedia called KNOL.
K-N-O-L. As in knowledge.
Yes. So if you go to knol.google.com, you'll see their version of Wikipedia online. So once again, the do-no-evil Google is sort of saying, oh, that's a good idea. We should do that too.
Mm.
So as a result, they've knocked
up... what the point of a Me Too on that particular one is, but...
Yes. Well, apparently there are certain groups that you can, that's like moderated type sort of group. There's channels.
Right.
I haven't really had a good look at it at this point in time, but the interesting thing, which I guess is probably going to be the big concern, is that they can place advertising within...
In your wiki. In your Wikipedia.
Absolutely. Imagine having, you go to Wikipedia and you type in, I don't know, asparagus, and all of a sudden you get asparagus soup tins and things like that popped up on your... advertising. I don't know whether that's sort of quite... Have we stretched the bounds of research here? Is this where it's becoming silly and commercial and out of control?
Well, I guess it if it gives you value for money, if you get greater information because there's more assets and resources thrown at it because of the sponsorship, it's a good thing.
I don't know.
If...
Knowles are, apparently, authoritative articles about specific topics written by people who know about these subjects. So,
unlike Wiki.
Okay, good. You've obviously had a bad experience on Wiki. Never believe everything they say on the internet. Is that your motto? Yeah, good. So, Googlepedia, that'll be one of those very interesting things to watch and see how it evolves. Go and have a look, noel.google.com. Tell us your thoughts. Come up on the chat.
I'm reading about how to do lung transplants.
Oh, are you? Good. Yeah. Well, see, that's exactly what you need to know. While we're talking about the large organisations of computer repute, Apple, what's this? There's some rumours and speculation that they're going to dust off the Newton again. Now, that was the very first. I remember a friend of mine, David Jarmoody,
who's been in here. What's the quote out of Simpsons?
Yeah, eat up Martha. Yep.
What's going on here, boys? Have you heard about this?
Well, the Newton rumour gets dusted off quite regularly. I'm actually quite an avid fan
of the Newton. Have
you got one? I've got all of them. They had several.
All of them? There was a collection.
There was.
What's the collective noun of Newtons?
Newti, I suppose. I don't know. But wonderful machines. And I guess what this is people wishing yet again for the tablet version of the MacBook. It's unlikely they're going to dust off the Newton itself because the Newton ran a completely different operating system. And, you know, iPhone, the Apple TV, and every other Mac product runs OS X or a cut-down version of it. So it's unlikely they're going to resurrect a product with an old operating system. Even though it had some innovations that we still don't see around in PDAs, it's unlikely that particular platform's going to see life again.
But they may be looking at some of the features to be incorporated into new products, or perhaps to use the name somewhere else? Or
I don't know that they'd use the name, because I think there's a bit of an aversion with the Big Steve about the Newton as well. It's one of the first products he canned when he came back. But there's a lot of the technologies from Newton that got built into OS X. So Inkwell made its way through, which is the handwriting recognition. And whilst the Eat Up Martha version of it, which was in the early 90s, has got a very bad rap.
Eat Up Martha? Where did they get that name from?
It was Bart writing... No, who was it? Someone was writing on a Newton.
In the Simpsons, writing a note in their Newton to beat up Martin.
That's right.
And, the Newton misread the handwriting.
As it tended to do back then. But by the time the Newton was canned, the 2100 was the last model they made, the handwriting recognition was actually a lot better and a lot faster. And so its current reincarnation is Inkwell, and it's actually still in OS X.
Okay.
So there's bits of it there. And I guess the other key feature...
It was fairly revolutionary in its time, wasn't it?
Well, it was. And the article that we've got in the newsletter regarding the dusting off the Newton is actually quite a negative article about Apple saying that they didn't manage, or what is it, they couldn't do a PDA. They actually invented the term personal digital assistant. So I think the author of the original article about this was a bit misguided, but that's my personal opinion.
That's fair enough. That's what we're here for. And you're referring to an item on IT News which came out during the course of the week.
That's right.
By Nick Farrell.
Good on you, Nick.
Good on you, Nick.
Need to do some research. But but the Newton idea of having a pen and a stylus and having a tablet is very popular amongst graphic artists in the Mac community. But most of the comments are that because it's such a niche market, it's unlikely Apple are actually going to do that.
I used to see a lot of Mac people go around with sharpened fingernails, specifically cut, so that when they didn't have their stylus, they could...
For the Newton.
Write on the Newton. Yes, is that true?
Oh, probably.
Like, yeah, it's very funny.
You could buy all sorts of stylus. I have got a gold-plated stylus for my
old
Newton. It's
a bit like a plectrum when it comes to a muso, really, isn't it? You can buy your stylus for your PDA. Well, that's very interesting. Early on in the show, I don't know whether you caught it before you came out from under the table there, JD, we were talking about how they got their name. Now, tell me if there's any truth in this rumour. Apple Computers, it was the favourite fruit of founder Steve Jobs. He was 3 months late in filing a name for the business, and he threatened to call his company Apple Computers if his other colleagues didn't suggest a better name by 5 o'clock. True or false?
Oh, I don't think that's true.
No, exactly. I didn't think that's true either. But anyway, it's a good story. I've got some other ones here too. I haven't read any yet for a while. Microsoft, coined by Bill Gates to represent the company that was devoted to micro computer software. Originally christened micro-soft, which I do recall. I think there was a hyphen originally in it. The hyphen was removed later on.
Yeah.
Motorola, founder Paul Galvin came up with this name when his company started manufacturing radios for cars. The popular radio company at the time was called Victrola.
Yeah, so it's a Victrola for your motor car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That sounds reasonable.
Makes sense.
Hotmail. Do we want to go there? Founder Jack Smith got the idea of accessing email via the web from a computer anywhere in the world when Sabir Bahita
I think that's how you pronounce it, came up with the business plan for the mail service. He tried all kinds of names ending in mail and finally settled for Hotmail, as it included the letters HTML, the programming language used to write web pages. It was initially referred to as capital H, lowercase o.
Oh, dear.
Capital T, capital M. There's the HTML reference, sort of. And then AIL, sort of, or the L capital on the L, end, capital
yeah.
L on the end. So
yeah,
that's how.
So the HTML was the capital.
Yeah, so if you can visualize that, capital H.
And you see, I would have thought Hotdesk, Hotmail, that would make sense. But anyway, there you go.
That, of course, these days with Hotmail users, that would go right over their heads. They wouldn't even think about that.
HTML, what's that?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yes. PHP.
PHP. Just don't go there. All right, back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Mars got invaded from Earth today.
Not doing anything wrong, got nothing to worry about.
Probably a reason for that.
Is that not a fair call?
Damn iTunes. Damn it to hell, I say.
If you're driving along, don't text while you're driving. It's bad for your health.
So if you want social media traffic, you have to consider the audience.
They embed an image in it that's got a unique number as its name.
Entertaining.
Don't look at me in that tone of voice.
Informative.
Do not switch off your brain.
Independent.
People are blogging about it already.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Bit of common sense, people, please.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
One of the voices you heard in that promo there was Lydia Davis. She's our US correspondent. She's been on holidays. She goes away every so often. She's been down at in Mexico sunning herself. And normally she brings along cyclones and hurricanes and living up to her name. That's what happened this time as well.
Oh, excellent.
So, yes. Anyway, we might hear from her on the show one year shortly. That'd be good. Anyway, during the course of the break, the boys on the panel in their spare time have calculated and have now worked out that there is actually a data plan that exceeds all expectations when it comes to extortionately ripping people off.
Even worse than the iPhones.
Even worse than the iPhones. And it's called the SMS. Now, what have you worked out, Graham?
Well, I should say this was prompted by someone on the chat room. I was just having a glance back to see what they were talking about while we were doing the show, which is not always the same thing.
No, it's completely different on the chat forum at times, isn't it?
And I saw that someone had tried to calculate the cost per megabyte of an SMS message. Now, if you bear in mind an SMS message, you only get 160 characters. So he came up with one figure, which I'm not quite sure how he reached that, but I did a quick back-of-the-envelope calculation here, or quick Microsoft calculator calculation here.
So we're comparing...
There's your error.
We're comparing this to, say, what, $2 a meg on the worst, or $1.65 or something if you roam from 3 to Telstra.
Remember
or something?
When the Intels couldn't add up?
So what's the SMS worth?
Well, by my calculations, if you go 1024 by 1024 gives you a megabyte in bytes, then you divide it by 160 characters, and then you multiply by about 25 cents for an SMS, I reckon it comes out to $1,638.40 if you're paying 25 cents for an SMS message. So that's $1,638.40 per megabyte.
No wonder the telcos are rubbing their hands with SMS. That's why they want SMS.
So, yes, they're...
Don't go texting anyone multiple SMSs. You're just giving them so much revenue.
There you go.
It's so email, well done. Message, so email on your iPhone is cheaper than SMS.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely. All right, Windows 7 apparently is on track. We had heard from Mr. Bulmer earlier on that the Windows 7 is scheduled for the release 3 years after Vista is released. Now, a lot of people are still sitting on the fence when it comes to Windows 7. Which is, I don't know, why is everyone just so skeptical of 7? Is it because it just takes so much resources from a computer? Is that the reason why?
Or Windows 7 is supposed to solve that problem. That's the problem with Vista, is that it's got so big and so slow and got so much in it and does so much that you don't necessarily need. But, Windows 7, is you're supposed to be able to install it only installing the bits that you need. And therefore,
you can do that in Linux, can't you?
Yeah, that's right.
You can do that in Server 2008. That's why everyone's using them as desktops.
There you go. So there's some hope that Windows 7 will be a slightly leaner, meaner sort of operating system. Hopefully,
maybe they're just
a
waiting
more
for
sensible competitor to the Macintosh OS X.
Maybe they're just waiting for processors.
to speed up a bit more before they let it loose.
Well, that's the other thing with Vista. If you think back to when Windows XP came out, we had all the same problems. It was incredibly slow. It made the fastest 486 machines look really, really slow. And yeah, and now you know, XP runs nice and fast on a relatively cheap Intel dual core with a gig of memory, so which was unheard of back when it came out. So that's the other thing that will happen is that Vista will become faster with a generation or two of hardware. But
which is one of the interesting things about Microsoft developing their operating system. And again, I'll put my Apple hat on, but I've got a G4 Cube. Now I've upgraded the processor, so it's a 1 gig processor, but essentially it's a 7-year-old computer, and I'm running the current operating system on it. So
yeah.
This is really an indicator of
something that Apple are getting right that Microsoft are consistently getting wrong. They're developing what's called bloatware. It's got too many features. It does too much. It tries to be all things to all men, and it fails. So
Maybe they've learned from that with the new server core stuff. You can only install what you need.
Well, that's what we're hoping, and that's what we're hoping they're going to learn with Windows 7.
Small Business Server, which is a server which encompasses a lot of, technology for an office, like Exchange Server and things like that, and web server technology. The Windows 2008.
One of Microsoft's best products. Yes. I love it. Yeah.
And it's come down in price too, amazingly. But that's scheduled for release this quarter because they've released Server 2008, which is just the base server. But if you want to deploy it as the office sort of thing, that's about to be released.
And they only announced this not all that long ago, in fact, because no one knew when they were going to release Small Business Server 2008, and they've now said it's going to be November.
November. Okay, good. I look forward to getting my discs when it comes. I'll load it up and have a play. It looks very
definitely be
promising.
One to watch. Although for new installations in the field for real offices, I'd still stick with Small Business Server 2003. It's a great product and it's pretty much bulletproof these days and works. Whereas the new one coming out will have bugs in it because new software always does. So just hold off 6 months if you're going to do your new installation of SBS.
And how does Microsoft market their product when they bring out Small Business version? Do they then drop the price of the Basic Server edition?
Not really.
No, because the Small Business Server is effectively the discounted product.
Right. So for those who have been listening to Andrew about, well, I'll get the Basic Server and I'll just put in the workstation components, it's not going to get any cheaper. So no. The price will stay the same.
No, very unlikely. What happens with Small Business Server is it's actually a really great deal for small businesses because what you get is you get Exchange rolled into it and you get SharePoint rolled into it.
That's the email where you can...
Exchange is your email server and your collaboration server and allows you to share calendars and do all that sort of stuff with all your colleagues.
And SharePoint.
A company website which you can collaborate on and, a little bit like a wiki almost where everybody can contribute to the website.
A bit like Apache that's built into the OS X.
Yeah, no doubt it is, yeah. But they roll it all together. Plus, they also, because Microsoft, you have to have a client access license for each client that connects, and they sell special Small Business Server client access licenses that have...
Oh, they still
not
get
only,
you?
They get you, but not so badly as buying all the individual ones separately. If you get a small business one, you're getting a really good deal because you get
10,
the,
don't you?
You get five.
Five
with
out
it,
of
you
box,
did
maybe.
With 2003. I haven't... Presumably they're going to keep that up. But you get the server CAL as well as the Exchange CAL as well as
client access license
and all the others that you need all rolled into one. So it is a good deal. It's effectively very...
It's
very
a good deal if you use all the products that are rolled in.
It is, yes, exactly right, yeah. And it is cost effective if you're an IT intensive business but you've only got a small number of, even if you've only got up to five users on your network, it's quite a good system.
It also means that you can remotely come in and check your emails if you're far away, or
certainly allows you
download
to do that.
Files
Outlook
off
web
the work
access
server
works really well on it. Yeah,
yeah, no, it's a good, a good product all around. Yeah. Internode, one of the best ISPs in Australia. In fact, if I had my choice, I've been with them once, but where I am now, I can't connect to their ADSL2 service. They have put a DSLAM, or they are in the process of putting DSLAMs into the Exchange where I'm connected.
Oh, yes.
But at this point in time, it's just not possible. It's in build waiting, whatever that means. Means in build waiting. I think they emit for Telstra. That's the next bit after that, where they help them cable it up and all that. Anyway, The Internode, which I think is also Whirlpool. If you go to Whirlpool forums, it's the number one ISP of people's choice there. Mm-hmm. They do it very well. They're the first ISP to offer IP version 6. Now, Graham, I was going to ask you this, putting you on the spot here a little bit too. Why do we need IP version 6? And let's not get the nerd alert out too early, but IP addresses, as we spoke about DNS servers earlier on in the show, and when you're online, your computer has a unique number.
That's right. Now
that's, what's that IP for, isn't
that's
it?
IP version 4, that's yeah. right.
And they skipped IP version 5.
IP version 5 was a development sort of...
It was a Windows ME of IP addressing, yeah.
Was it? Okay, and we're talking about the telephone.
And it's version 6 is the new...
This is the equivalent of going from 9-digit phone numbers to 10-digit phone numbers.
That's
remember
exactly
that?
Exactly what it is, yes. Only instead of going, it's orders of magnitude worse than that. So it's going from, oh, I can't remember how many bits. Can you?
No, don't ask me.
So this is, they're basically rolling out new IP addresses for everybody because we've run out of old ones. Is that why they're doing this?
Oh, we ran out of IP addresses a long, long time ago. And that's why, you know, you've got these, you know, in your private networks, you run these special addresses and everybody uses the same sort of private network addresses and you only have one public address because they're in such short supply. So, yeah, IP version 6 is going to change that. There's going to be more than enough for every individual piece of equipment in the entire universe to have one address. And
well, that's a big statement.
That is a very big statement, isn't
but
it?
That's the way it's going to work. And, yeah, it's just a... As someone pointed out, it does make for on the chat room here. It does make for long and
really
like
you're distracting him beautifully.
Confusing looking addresses, but again, you're not going to see those because they'll be hidden in the background and behind the domain name system, like we were talking about before.
Yes, so, the chat room's actually on topic at the moment. It's good. They're talking about Internodes. Jamie G's been on Internode for years, been very happy. I concur with all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's good. And the IP address as well, yeah. We're not getting too techie tonight, but it'll be interesting to see as we move across. Because I guess the other thing, too, we've got to take into consideration is mobile data. Because not only does the fixed thing, ADSL or cable in your house, have an IP address, so does your phone.
Yeah, that's right. And what really should happen is that every device that's even possibly going to be connected to the network should have its own separate IP address that's globally unique. So you talk about having, you know, your fridge having an, or your toaster having an IP address, or your telly
have an IP address
all
very shortly.
All those sorts of things. We're going to need a huge number more addresses. So
we're going to have a unique MAC address, which is the identifier of the hardware. Yeah. As well as an IP address.
Now, see those in routers,
now,
don't you?
Now we're getting very technical with the link layer versus the network layer.
Nerd alert!
We knew that was coming, didn't we? Oh, dear. So, yeah, I'm just trying to find the figures here. That yeah, there's... 2 to the power 52 addresses every observable star in the known universe. So,
I think we'll take a break. We'll be back very shortly.
You're listening.
Any questions? You're all speechless over this.
No, you're listening.
You've got the world's most aggressive spam filter.
You're listening.
If you've got the wrong SIM card, it's because they sold you the wrong thing.
Tech Talk Radio.
We may have digressed. The network's probably ready for fiber to the node now.
Telstra has lost the ACCC court case.
They download loss because they can't stand watching it on commercial television.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Briefly, before we go on to the odd spot and gadget of the week, because we're rapidly running out of time on this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio, 1 in 5 purchases these days actually purchase via a mobile phone. Now, On a mobile phone. I find this quite interesting to believe, really, but this was a survey carried out by BuzzCity, which describes itself as a provider of global wireless communities and consumer services. And apparently a fifth of respondents to a survey have bought items using their mobile phone, and more than a third expressed an interest in carrying out money transfers via their handset. Now, I wonder if this has got anything sort of to do with the trends that our guest last week, Jason Sterling, was talking about when he was saying that we're all going to move into this wirelessly PDA-ish sort of SMS-ish sort of word. Now, even Telstra got barcodes these days on things. Have you seen the barcodes?
No.
You can take a photo with a barcode with your mobile phone off a poster or a billboard or something.
Right.
And you SMS it or text it or whatever you do. MMS it is the word I'm looking for. So you can't do it on your iPhone. But, yeah.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet, anyway. But I just find that amazing that people are actually buying stuff on their...
Yeah, I've never done it. I would buy stuff off the internet. I have bought stuff off the internet, but not with a mobile phone.
No, well, they're saying here, books, downloads, and virtual gifts are the most popular items purchased via a mobile phone. Games, movies, and music were also in high demand. Now, I can understand that, because you'd be using one of, like, Hutchison 3 or even Telstra. You go to their Big Pond site, and you can download music and ringtones and silly things like that. But outside of the technology that you actually use on a mobile phone, I find that pretty amazing. Maybe you buy flowers for the love of your life as you're heading home. Text her some flowers or something, rocks up before you do. I don't know. But I just thought that was interesting. I personally haven't, it's not my thing, texting sounds and buying
like the,
stuff.
Sounds like the sort of survey done by someone with an extra grind, but yeah.
Oh, you never know. Also, the other thing too, another report that's out, intrusive ads turn surfers away. Well, doll. We got the Homer Simpson in this one, but nearly 3/4 of web surfers have left their favourite sites because of intrusive or annoying ads.
Yep.
Now,
this is one of Google's great successes, is that they worked out how to make revenue from ads without getting them to be too intrusive.
Yeah. Adblock Pro does it beautifully for me. Adam got me onto that, and it's an absolute trooper. I can't live without it now.
I've got it installed, but I only use it for the really seriously intrusive ones, you know, the ones that bounce around the page or those sorts of things.
Oh, yeah.
I don't use it all the time.
And we're seeing more and more of this sort of stuff too, especially from organisations which sort of tend to give the information away, like a newspaper, like you know, your local. They like putting the ads up, and IT columnists and stuff like that. You sort of... You've got to find, and that's the other, the real thing I hate is the fact that you're trying to read an article and there's something bouncing around the screen. It's like, go away. You seen those ones on the IT thingy-me bops? No? No? Okay, well, it's just me then. It's just me. Anyway, so yes, it's pretty obvious that the more you annoy your listeners, the more chance you've got of actually alienating them and doing all that sort of stuff. All right, we're going to go to the last bit. We'll be back with the Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week after this.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
You're listening.
In terms of the volume,
I understand to give fingerprints. Now, this...
We may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometres
per second.
Don't open
things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do appear.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of my own!
This week's Tech Talk Gadget of the Week is a new little box that I bought just the other day. I went down to my local... Well, actually, I didn't go to my local thing. I surfed for it online and I bought it over the internet. It's a new D-Link DIR451 3G wireless router. What the hell's that, I hear you ask? Well, if you're ever out in the bush, if you're ever on the fringe area of service or something like that, and you want to serve wireless broadband to a few computers, being laptops and things like that, this is a great way to do it. We have a property where we're right on the edge of 3G or the next G stuff, and just putting a little network card in the machine doesn't quite cut it. So you've got to stick an antenna up the tower, plug it into your wireless router, and it just serves to all your laptops around the place, around the farmhouse, really, really well. And that's, I figured if you're in need of one of those, especially if you're on a dodgy ISP and it goes down regularly, you can whack it in the office and people can still surf the net on their laptop. So it's always good to have it in your junk box, really. This one, recommended retail price is about $230-odd from D-Link, available at a lot of popular shops. But if you surf around online, you'll pick it up for about $160 like I did. So not a bad investment if you want to put something away like that for a rainy day. All right, that's the Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week, which is the D-Link DIR451 3G mobile router.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
And if you've just installed your brand new D-Link wireless router and you want to find out if it's working at the right speeds, you would go to
www.speedtest.net.
I use this. It's good.
Like this is a really good site, this one. I use it quite a bit too.
Tells you how good your ADSL or
that's
whatever's
right.
not
you
working.
Can, you can find out if you know your ADSL provider says you're getting, you know, 1500, you know, kilobits per second and whether you're actually getting close to that or not.
Very handy. And you can post it on forums and things like that too.
Exactly. So when you're right. About they give you get. The they give you the code to just copy and paste straight into the forums. To put your results up, and they tell you what your upload speed is as well as your ping time.
Handy,
and,
just to check it all
really
out, isn't
nice
it?
Really nice graphical user interface,
is
you know, point and click, and it looks really nice. The only thing is you need Flash, but it's a great little site if you want to make sure your internet
where do we go?
Is working the way
one
it
more
should.
Time?
www.speedtest.net.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
In this week's Odd Spot, cops catch teen by text message.
I like this, yeah.
Police in North Carolina have managed to catch a teenager suspected of burglary using his text messages. The police were called to a series of local break-ins, went to an apartment of a suspect who promptly fled. After a bit of a run, they caught him behind a tree, grabbed his mobile phone as they arrested him. As they were doing so, the suspect got a text message from another teenager asking if he'd been caught. The police thought, They replied no in the text and asked for the person to come and pick up the suspect, or rather me in this case. Shortly afterwards, a car arrived and the police were able to arrest another suspect and eventually found a van containing all the stolen property, which was then returned to the owners.
Oh, gotcha.
So there you go. Always use code in your text messages.
Absolutely. All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron is not with us this evening, but Dr. Graham and Dr. JDR, I'm Andrew McComb. Thank you very much for your company. We'll meet you the same time, same place, same radio station, same podcast, same time next week. I think we've got all that sorted. Meanwhile, come visit us on the chat forum, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. It's been going so fast there tonight, I can't even keep up with it all. Thanks, guys. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email link, which we've been a bit slack on lately, but nonetheless, give us an email. Until then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.